Hey, everybody. I'm Kelsey Kupfer, taking over Thinking Out Loud today to bring you stories reported, written, and produced by local high school students as part of Making Waves Youth Radio Initiative. Making Waves was founded about a year ago by me and Michaela Tucker to empower young people to share their true stories. Today, you'll hear stories by four Rockbridge High School students. I'm here now with Making Waves youth reporter Mariah Doze. Mariah, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead and start us off by telling us about your story and how you chose the topic.
My story is about educational inequality in the classroom and how stereotypes influence that educational inequality. With the issues going on at Mizzou right now, that's something that hits really close to home, and it's an issue that the world needs to hear about.
What was the most fun part for you in putting together this story?
Well, definitely seeing it come out the way it did is really amazing, because like when you look at where you started, like you see all like your drafts, and you just like in the beginning you don't know how is it gonna be the best story you can tell. And then when it just comes out and you voice it and it's over and you just look at it and you know that everybody included will be really happy with the product you produced, it's a really good feeling.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about your experience reporting the story?
I feel like everybody should have a chance to get into the world of journalism, because journalism and the media has such a big impact in the way we see things. And if we can all have a chance to like add to that perspective, we'd be a more well-rounded society.
Here's Mariah's story, Educating Beyond Stereotypes.
Stereotypes are like expectations. At school, the stereotype for Black students is unintelligence. We're not expected to succeed academically. The surprised looks I get when I say something intelligent in the lonesome AP classes where no one looks like me remind me daily that because I am Black, I am perceived as academically incompetent. Studies show many teachers bring preconceived notions about Black students into the classroom. I caught up with Brittany Packnett, the executive director of Teach for America in St. Louis, at a forum on educational inequality. She says stereotypes about Black students can lead to low expectations, and the consequences of low expectations can be dangerous.
Whatever expectation you set for a student, that's the one they'll reach. If you set low expectations for some students and higher ones for others, then that is going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
The stereotypes that harm Black students are reinforced through our school curriculum. In my classes, the authors I read and the people I learn about are overwhelmingly white. My brother DeAndre graduated from high school 4 years ago. He says, besides from a yearly lesson on Martin Luther King Jr., he hardly ever learned about people who looked like him.
They don't teach you anything about yourself. They're teaching all the white people about themselves, but they're not teaching none of the Black people about themselves, other than that you're a slave, or that you used to be a slave, or that your ancestors were slaves. They don't say anything positive.
When we only learn about things from a white perspective, it leaves room for misconceptions about people of color. At my high school, Lee Franklin teaches a class called African American Literature and Composition. He says schools have a responsibility to teach students about different cultures and identities they may not otherwise experience.
Schools should be and can be the driving tool that brings the races together, because they can provide platforms and areas in which we can immerse the culture together and learn about other people.
Bringing students together by teaching a diverse curriculum is one way to diffuse the power of stereotypes and make school a more inclusive place. My mom, Dawn Allen, is an advocate for educational equality. She says the school system has to see all students as equally valuable.
Education is to be concerned about all students, you know, be concerned about the welfare and the health of all students, applauding the success of all students, not just one.
School needs to be an environment in which the cultures, histories, and experiences of all students are celebrated. My high school guidance counselor, Dr. Samuel Martin, says this kind of cultural affirmation is necessary for students to succeed.
Seeing yourself reflected in the school culture, feeling a part of the school culture, is important. I think you have to feel safe, feel like you belong here to reach your full potential.
In school, we are all being taught to believe something about ourselves and others, whether we realize it or not. If school is to truly be the place where minds are nurtured and the drive for excellence is encouraged, we can't let stereotypes continue to be a barrier. we need to educate beyond stereotypes so that all students can have an equal opportunity for success in school. For Making Waves Youth Radio, I'm Mariah Dozé.
Mariah produced that story with me and Michaela Tucker as part of Making Waves Youth Radio Initiative. Today we're bringing you stories written, reported, and produced by Rockbridge High School students. I'm here now with youth reporter Jenna Liu. All right, Jenna, tell me about your story.
Well, around the time I was thinking about what I wanted to do, there was just so much vitriol in the news towards immigrants. And it got me thinking about my own identity as a first-generation immigrant, as the child of immigrants. And then when I was thinking about that, I was also thinking about how when I was younger, I was going through a lot of internalized racism and trying to reject my identity, trying to reject my culture. And then I was looking at the similarities between those two things and realizing where they converge. And a lot of it had to do with me feeling like I was an outsider, like my family, because they hadn't like sailed across on the Mayflower, that we were somehow lesser than everyone else.
What do you hope that people in the Columbia community gain by hearing your story?
Well, I think one of the most pressing issues right now is definitely the Syrian refugees. Given the fact that there's been so much opposition, I think it's so important for people in Colombia to realize that outsiders aren't dangerous, that they're not different, that they're just people. And I think that it's important to celebrate the humanity in everyone.
Here's Jenna's story. Where are you really from? Colorism and racism in immigrant communities.
I am an immigrant, but not. To clarify, my parents are immigrants. Still, that distinction sometimes feels a little blurry when a classmate tells me how impressed they are by my English. My straight black hair and half-moon eyes occasionally give people a certain impression that I wasn't born in Seattle, that America isn't the only thing I've known for 17 years, that I don't belong. And then I start to doubt if I actually can call this place home. When kids made fun of my tofu lunch in the third grade, it was hard not to feel like an outsider. It got harder when I entered into my teens and school became a complicated game of how to fit in. For me, fitting in involved trying to make people forget what they could plainly see, that I am Chinese.
You once asked me, Mom, do I have any little bit of like a white blood? It was kind of like a, what? I told you no, not at all. We're 100% Chinese blood.
That was my mom, Yiming Zheng. She was naturalized as a U.S. citizen in 2009, but still carries traces of her home country's language whenever she speaks. When I was younger, she embarrassed me by speaking to grocery store cashiers with her distinct accent. I wanted so badly to erase that accent, such a clear example of my family's differences. As it turns out, the urge I've had to fit in with the white people isn't unique to just me. I have a friend, Rachita Ghosh, whose parents immigrated from India.
When I was younger, I used to be ashamed of my culture just because it was different. We danced weirdly, we dressed differently, and we spoke a different language, and I used to try to stifle that part of me.
Though I can relate to Rachita's discomfort with her Indian background, another one of my friends, Timothy Kalenikov, can't.
I definitely feel proud of my heritage. I like Russian culture. I mean, I was born there, so of course I'll be patriotic about it. I haven't really had any pressure to, like, not be Russian.
Rachita, Timothy, and I are all first-generation immigrants raised in the U.S. So why hasn't Timothy felt the same pressure to reject his culture that Rachita and I have experienced? Well, Timothy is white. The association between resembling the majority and having pride in your heritage is a powerful one. Dr. Rebecca Martinez is a women and gender studies professor at the University of Missouri who studies immigration. Dr. Martinez says when you look like you fit in, you tend to feel like you do as well.
When you have white privilege as an immigrant, you know, that's something that you start out with that's an advantage. And so maybe you're not dealing with the same kinds of racism. People see you and they don't see you as an outsider.
Dr. Martinez says immigrants of color and their families face racism their white immigrant peers don't.
And you'll notice it if you've ever gotten the question, where are you from? And so where are you from? If I say California, that's somehow not good enough. No. Where are you really from? Okay, I'm from Orange County. No. Where are you really from? Well, what are you asking me?
I've struggled my whole life with feeling like an outsider in my country of birth. But I realized the implications of racism towards immigrants stretch far beyond me. When Donald Trump calls Mexican immigrants rapists and murderers, and when 31 state governors attempt to lock Syrian refugees out of their borders, the outsider versus insider mentality turns into a matter of dehumanization and disregard for people's lives. So how do we find unity? The best solution might be the most obvious and the most difficult. For people to reflect on their social position and have honest conversations with one another about privilege. I know I've thought long and hard about my identity as a young woman with scattered roots, and after nearly 18 years, I think I've truly learned to accept who I am. I just hope that America can too. For Making Waves Youth Radio, I'm Jenna Liu.
That was Where Are You Really From? Colorism and Racism in Immigrant Communities. Today, we're bringing you stories produced by local high school students through Making Waves Youth Radio Initiative. I'm joined now by youth reporter Zoya Khan. So, Zoya, your story is titled Growing Up Muslim in Mid-Missouri. Tell me why you chose the topic you explored in your story.
I chose to talk about something that was pretty personal to me, just because it's not really something that I talk about too much otherwise, and I thought this would be a really good outlet to kind of get that story so that more people could hear about it. And it's just something that was really personal to me, and I wanted to share it with others.
What do you hope people end up taking from your story?
Well, one thing is that, you know, Muslims are not all the same, and that's pretty clear in my story, hopefully. And it's kind of difficult sometimes to be different in high school or just in life in general. So just that it's okay to be different, and so that's one thing that I really hope they take away.
Here's Zoya's story, growing up Muslim in Mid-Missouri.
Growing up as a Pakistani Muslim, I usually wouldn't tell people about my religion. When I do mention it, they react with surprise. That's because when people hear the word Muslim, they often have a certain idea of what that means. And since I dress like an average American teenager and I don't wear hijab, I don't really fit the stereotype of a Muslim girl. I talked with Dr. Nathan Hofer, an assistant professor in the Department of Religious Studies at the University of Missouri who studies Islamic mysticism, about this perception of uniformity within Muslims.
There's a common assumption, right, that all Muslims are basically going to be the same and that they're all observant. They all pray, they all fast during Ramadan, they all wear a hijab if they're women, but that's obviously not the case.
Growing up, I've been exposed to different cultures that have affected how I practice my religion. One specific decision has affected my American upbringing more than others, wearing shorts. I know that shorts are not considered modest as a Muslim, and my subconscious reminds me of that when I wear them. But my own religious expectations of myself often contradict my actions because, in America, every girl wears shorts, and I don't want to be any different. I've struggled with balancing the social demands of an American high school while preserving my religious identity. But the difficulties of growing up as a Muslim in America are not just internal. They're also dependent on my surroundings.
It's definitely harder. Like, you have to ask your teacher, can I get out early to go pray or something? Or, like, when you have to miss school for, you know, your celebration, everything.
That was my friend Hannah talking about the difficulties she has in school practicing her religion. Muslims are supposed to pray 5 times a day, and for students at my high school, the only place they can do this is in a small storage room in our guidance office. Like me, Hannah doesn't wear a hijab.
Honestly, if I were to go to Middle East, like somewhere that was predominant, like Islam country, I probably would wear it.
I know what she means. I visited Pakistan, and there, being Muslim is easy because everyone around you is Muslim. The call to prayer is heard 5 times a day, mosques are found on every corner, and Muslim holidays are celebrated by everyone. Here in the United States, it's a little different, and in high school, even more so. An important aspect for many high school students are relationships and, of course, going to parties. My friend Mariam says her religion sometimes limits these parts of her high school experience.
I'm mostly friends with non-Muslims, and so a lot of them have, like, romantic relationships and things like that that I've never been allowed to be a part of. And it's never been something that bothers me so much that it's something that I'm constantly thinking about. but it's still like affected how I feel as a normal high schooler.
None of us regret being Muslim, and it's something we're proud of.
It's something that I really enjoy, and that while I don't do it perfectly, I think that it's something that has made me into the person that I am.
Religion is a choice, and it is my choice. I still struggle every day staying true to my religion and fitting in with American society. I've realized that the struggle is worth it. It has made me a stronger, more open-minded person who is no longer afraid to talk about her beliefs. For Making Waves Youth Radio, I'm Zoya Khan.
Zoya produced that story with me and Michaela Tucker as part of Making Waves Youth Radio Initiative. You're listening to Thinking Out Loud. I'm Kelsey Kupfer. Joining me now is youth reporter Madison Wright. So, Madison, tell me about your story.
So, I decided to talk about performance-based acceptance and how that has impacted my life and how we should transition from a more like, this is what I need to do in order to be loved and accepted versus this is who I am and that's why I am loved and accepted by others and by myself.
What was one thing that you learned throughout the course of reporting your story?
One thing for sure is that was really helpful for me was being able to process everything that had happened with my swimming and being able to kind of dive deeper into that and really think about why was this such a big issue for me and how does this still impact my daily life? And to be able to kind of put that into words and be able to not only analyze that and process that for myself, but be able to share that with other people was really helpful to me.
Here's Madison's story, challenging performance-based acceptance.
I was probably the most stressed-out 12-year-old you would ever meet. To all of my mom's Facebook friends, I was a talented swimmer headed to the Olympics, a verdict proven by the more than 6 years' worth of photos on my mom's profile page, ranging from 5-year-old me wearing goggles that were too big for my head to pictures of 12-year-old me in oversized t-shirts holding newly won medals. But beyond the pictures, something was definitely wrong. Over time, my devotion to swimming had turned into something destructive. My self-worth became linked to my swimming performance. Before races, I had intense anxiety, chronic nightmares, massive mood swings, and a constant dread of going to practices and racing. Recently, I was talking with a group of friends about our experience with sports, and as I was listening to one of my friends, Clara, talk about her struggle with soccer, it struck me that this wasn't an issue that I alone had dealt with.
I would start seeing my, like, goodness, I guess, only in soccer. So, like, if I was a good soccer player, I felt accepted. When I got injured and I started to, like, obviously not play, and then even later on when I, like, could start playing again and I was behind everyone by a lot, I really started to beat myself up and dislike myself and just not be so happy anymore.
And my friend Kelly, who swims competitively at a national level, talked about how closely performance and sacrifices are linked and the tension that results from it. She says that when she does well,
it makes you feel like all the hard work you're putting into it is worth something and that the amount of sacrifices you're making in order to be at practice and be at meets, it makes it feel like, okay, this is worth it. This is something I can continue doing and I recognize that there's a direct benefit. And when it doesn't go as well, you sit there and you think, wow, I sacrificed all of this in order to achieve nothing.
Realizing that I was not alone in this performance-based acceptance struggle made me wonder why this issue is rarely talked about in society, especially our society, where competition is interwoven into our businesses, lifestyles, and culture. I became even more curious when Kelly Wright, a family counselor, shared her experience helping others through struggles with self-worth based on performance.
I worked with a teenage boy several years ago who had school anxiety. I felt like he was only as good as how he could perform at school. So if you can imagine, based on a test or an assignment, was going to be really contributing to how he was going to feel about his self-worth. It was almost like he was on a hamster wheel of performance that never really satisfied his worth.
So clearly this problem isn't exclusive to athletes or to me and my friends. So why don't we talk about it? Maybe because the solution to this problem takes more vulnerability and creates more of a personal risk than running scared through daily life, hoping that our actions and performance will be enough to make others accept us.
There's a huge difference between performance-based acceptance in team sports versus just having self-worth based on who you are, your being versus doing.
It seems like such a simple solution. So why is this such a problem? Maybe we are afraid that if we take away all of our accomplishments, we won't like who we are as people. I know that I was terrified that no one would like what they saw underneath the medals and the oversized goggles. Eventually, the pressure of year-round competitive club swimming became too much for me. Now, instead of swimming competitively year-round, I swim for my high school. After taking a few steps back, I've learned I am more than just a time at an event, or a first-place medal, or a broken record. I'm a teammate. I'm a friend. I am kind and outspoken, and I laugh too hard at jokes that aren't funny. Now I can see that, no matter what I do, I am worthy of acceptance, especially from myself. So I challenge you, and I challenge myself, to change the question from, what have I done with my life, to, what kind of person was I? What kind of person do I want to be? For Making Waves Youth Radio, I'm Madison Wright.
Madison produced that story with me and Michaela Tucker. You've been listening to stories produced by Making Waves Youth Radio Initiative. To hear all of our stories and to learn more about the program, visit our website, makingwavescomo.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at MWYRI. That's all I've got. I'm Kelsey Kupfer. Thanks for listening to Thinking Out Loud.